हरिः ओम् तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ओम् ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ नमो भगवते श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तिस्वरूपाय श्रीदयानन्दरूपाय परमगुरवे परमात्मने ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ This Purna Madaha, Purna Midam, Shanti Pata meaning also we will see later on. This is the Shanti Pataha usually recited for concluding any program, including our classes. But only for Shukla Yajurveda study, we begin the class with the Purna Madaha, Purna Midam. It's a very profound meaning it has, we will see that later on. But before we enter into the actual study of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we have to understand few things about the Bhashyam also. Even though we are not going to read the Bhashyam as such, we will definitely look into all the contents of the Shankaracharya's commentary. And whenever necessary, we'll also look into, I won't be reading the original text in Sanskritam, but still we'll get the contents of the Sureshwara Acharya's Vartikam. So, this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, as the name says, it is a very big Upanishad. And it is equally big like Chandogya Upanishad. But even though Chandogya Upanishad and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad belonging to Samaveda, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad belonging to Shukla Yajurveda are equally big Upanishads. Still, Adishankara Bhagavatpada had some more of affinity towards this Upanishad. Like his commentary on Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is much more vast than his commentary on Chandogya Upanishad. Of course, Chandogya Upanishad Bhashyam also is very well-known Bhashyam. Adishankara Bhagavatpada's any commentary upon any Upanishad is very important and beautiful. It brings the Upanishad's heart to us. But this Upanishad, he had written a huge, very large commentary on this Upanishad. And what happened, for Adishankara Bhagavatpada's commentary, his own disciple, Sureshwara Acharya had written this Vartikam. Vartikam means a notes on commentary. Commentary upon commentary is called Vartikam. So Sureshwara Acharya is called Vartika Karaha. We have one in another Vartikakara known as Vararuchihi. But Suresh Acharya is Vartikakaraha. So when people write the Vartikam, the explanatory notes or commentary upon the commentary, so they have to take care of whatever has been omitted by the commentator, and they must take care and they must comment upon it. And the Vartikakara is allowed to say any of his contradictory views also. And the beauty is Sureshwar Acharya's, even though Adishin Bhagatpada is his own guru, he has definitely the certain areas where Sureshwar Acharya says, points out that where he contradicts. There's a controversy there, he mentions that also in his Vartikam. And Vartikam consists of 12,000 verses. Not an easy joke, okay? 12, so you can imagine how big the Vartikam is, commentary up is. I wonder, even to read one verse, it takes so long for us. And write 12,000 verses of commentary upon commentary. Vartikam is in a verse form. His Vartikams. And so of all the four disciples of Adishankar Bhagavatpada, Sureshwar Acharya alone has got that place. A great contributor for the Sampradaya. So much as he has done. Anyway, with understanding, let us get into this study today. So, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, definitely a student of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad must understand the introductory bhashyam before entering into the actual text. It is very important to look into the contents of the introduction, Shankara Bhagavatpada's introduction to his commentary upon the Upanishad. That introductory bhashyam is always known as the Upodgata Bhashyam. And sometimes it is called Sambandha Bhashyam. Upodgata Bhashyam or Sambandha Bhashyam. When you say Sambandha, the word Sambandha itself means connection, relationship. So Sambandha Bhashyam means So Shankara Bhagavatpada, in his Sambandha Bhashyam, he presents the connection. What is the connection between Karma Kandaha and Jnana Kandaha? It's what is said to be Sambandha Bhashyam. Now, so this Sambandha Bhashyam is very well-known Bhashyam. And if you understand Sambandha Bhashyam written as an introduction to his commentary upon Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is as good as understanding all Sambandha Bhashyam wherever he has presented. There is a Sambandha Bhashyam presented in Taittiriya Upanishad also. Understanding one place itself is good enough to understand wherever the Sambandha is discussed, the same thing will be presented there. Because Sambandha Bhashyam itself is to show the connection between Karma Kandaha and Jnana Kandaha. What about Upasana Kandaha? Upasana Kandaha also is included in the Karma Kanda itself. Even though Upasana is said to be a separate part of the Veda, Upasana also is included in the Karma Kanda. Why? Because Upasana also is an activity only, mental activity. Then Upasana is included in the Karma Kanda itself. And the Sambandha Bhashyam of Adishankara Bhagavatpada also is big and very important one. That is why Sureshwar Acharya, again, he was very happy to write 1000 verses is Vartikam on Sambandha Bhashyam. So we can imagine how important this, even Suresh, the Sambandha Bhashyam also how important it is, we can make out. If Sambandha Bhashyam of Shankaracharya has a commentary written by Sureshwara Acharya known as Vartikam, consisting of 1000 verses. So it reveals the connection between Karma Kandaha and Jnana Kandaha of the Veda Shastram. So always this connection, relationship between Karma Kandaha and Jnana Kandaha is presented in the very introduction itself. And this discussion on the connection between, relationship between Karma Kandaha and Jnana Kandaha definitely involves controversy also. And Adishankara Bhagavad Pada presents this elaborately with all details. And Shankara Bhagavad Pada mentions, makes it very clear, three important factors pertaining to Shankara Bhagavad Pada presents three important factors pertaining to his discussion. That, what are they? First thing, see, Karma Kandaha of the Veda also is a pramanam. Means Karma Kandaha, Jnana Kandaha, the entire Veda together constitute, the entire Veda should be taken as a pramana grantaha. Not only Jnana Kandaha, the entire Veda should be taken as a pramana grantaha, a means of knowledge. This is the first factor he mentions. So Upanishad alone is not the pramanam. Of course, Upanishad alone is enough, as Upanishad alone serves as a pramanam to have the knowledge of the reality. That does not mean we should not respect Karma Kanda as something apramanam, as a non-pramanam. Even though Veda Antashastram, known as Jnana Kandaha, consisting of Upanishads, serve as the means of the attainment of knowledge of the reality Brahma, which alone will free us from bondage, still the entire Veda should be revered as the Pramana Grantaha. There should not be disrespect, disregard for Karma Kandaha, even though we do not study Karma Kandaha. Okay. Then, why? Because Karma Kanda also serves its own purpose. Even though we do not need it, we cannot make use of it, still Karma Kanda should be revered. Here, so when you take the entire Veda as the Pramanam, if you do not take the entire Veda as the Pramanam, then we'll see how Karma Kanda is said to be a Pramanam. Why Karma Kanda also is looked upon as a Pramanam? As a Pramanam for what? For Atma Jnanam, Brahma Jnanam, Jnana Kanda is the Pramanam. Similarly, Karma Kanda also serves as a Pramanam. For what? For knowing so many other subtle facts. So Karma Kanda also serves as a Pramanam to arrive at many, many subtle facts. Whereas, even this is how Shankaracharya tells us, but there is a Karma Kandi. Karma Kandi means the people who are given to specifically the study of the Karma Kanda, who are known as Karma Kandinaha, and who are also known as Pura Mimamsakaha, people who study the Karma Kanda of the Veda, specialize, and they analyze the mantras of the Karma Kanda, are known as Purva Mimamsakaha. And those poor Mimamsakaha, what do? They analyze the all the mantras pertaining to the rituals. Of course, the whole Karmakanda portion is a portion dealing with the rituals only. But they hold on to a view. They have their own contention that the main aim of the Veda is only to make a human being perform rituals, do karma, and enjoy the benefit of those rituals. This is their view. But we ourselves know now the main aim of the Veda is not making people just merely perform rituals, not converting people into ritualists. Of course, rituals are revered. Shankaracharya is very particular that we must respect rituals. We should know the value of it. We show the limitation of it also. What they can do, what they cannot do. Instead of understanding the limitations and advantages of karma, we should have due respect for Karmakanda. We should not ignore it as useless portion. At the same time, we should not hold on to Karmakanda as the ultimate. But the problem with the Purvamimamsaka is they hold on to only Karmakanda. And not only that, they also emphasize that main aim of the Veda itself is to make people learn karmas and perform karmas, enjoy the benefit of the results of the performance of rituals. That is their view. So because they are of that view, so they have a view that the view is called Vedasya Karma Pradhanyam Asti. Vedasya Vidhi Pradhanyam Asti. So Vedasya Vidhi Pradhanyam Asti. Pramanyam Asti. Vidhi Pramanyam. Karma Pramanyam. Karma Pradhanyam and Pramanyam. What does it mean? The Veda has the status of being status of giving importance for karma, and Veda has a status of giving importance for the ordained rituals. Vedasya karma pradhanyam vidhi pramanyam asti. That is what they say. Is their view. What happens? When Veda prescribes or suggests a given ritual stating that it is not compulsory for all, but it is optional. When Veda says, and these people say, no, it is something compulsory. So Karmakanda will say it's compulsory. Suppose Veda says that it is very important, it must be performed. And if it is not performed, then one will incur papam. One will earn papam, it says. There are two views. Veda prescribes many rituals. Like if we go to IKEA. In IKEA, of course, so many things are sold. You can go to IKEA, nobody can compel you to buy. I went many times, but never bought one thing also. Simply went with Rupal and Madhavi, other people, just to see things. When they buy something, I go with them. Once Priya and Shilama took me and bought me a lot of things also. What I'm saying, not that you must buy. It's a compulsion. Veda is like IKEA only. There's so many rituals are prescribed. And depending upon the people's needs and requirements, they can choose to perform the ritual with the help of an appropriate priest. There is option is there. But Purvamimamsaka will say, if the Veda prescribes a karma optionally, and Purvamimamsaka will say, It's a compulsory to do the ritual. That is the difference. Okay. Purva Mamsaka will say, if the ritual is not performed, you will incur papam, though it is compulsory to perform. That is his view. This is how Purva Mamsaka differs from Shankaracharya. So we can see many people mistake Shankaracharya to be, oh, Shankaracharya gives only importance for Vedanta. Of course, Vedanta is the primary. It's called Vedanta is said to be Shiro Ratnam. All the Upanishads are known as crest jewel of the Veda Shastram. Ultimately, what we need to understand is Vedantic vision. What is vision? A fact revealed by the Vedanta Shastram should be understood and should be assimilated. That is what is the ultimate aim of Veda. Once the Vedantic vision becomes understood and assimilated, then the Veda itself becomes what? Unnecessary. The whole Veda become, when Veda has served its purpose of revealing the ultimate vision, then we don't need Veda. Until the Jnanam, we need Veda Shastram. So now we are all people who have no clue of what is Karmakanda. So we don't need to study Karmakanda also. Shastram gives that, again Shastram gives that option. We need not study Karmakanda at all. You can straight away go to Upanishads, study the Upanishads and enjoy the benefit of studying the entire Veda. The option is given. But Purva Mimamsaka will not accept. He said whether you study Vedanta or not, definitely must study Karmakanda and enjoy the benefit of the Karmakanda. That is his argument. This is how Purva Mimamsaka, the Karmakandi known as Purva Mimamsaka, differs from the Vedanti. But Vedanti has respect for the entire Veda. But still he says Karmakanda is optional. But he also understands the benefits, advantages and the limitations of Karmakanda. But ultimately the main aim of the Veda is to make every human being discover the truth. Discover one's own essential nature, which happens to be the essential nature of the whole cosmos. So Veda's main aim is not to make a person perform the ritual and enjoy the benefits of the rituals alone. Veda's main primary aim is to help every individual discover the truth and obtaining as one's own self, thereby enjoy the benefit of moksha. And that is where a human being can find his relief. That's a solution for his problem. So whereas Purva Mimamsaka will say, perform ritual, perform ritual, perform ritual, practice also combined with upasana also, then earn more and more and more of punyam. There's nothing better than performing a ritual and practicing meditation, accumulating punyam, enjoying the benefits, even going to Vimaloka, other lokas. There's nothing which cannot be accomplished by performing a ritual. Everything can be accomplished. Yes, that is true. Artha, kama, dharma, everything can be accomplished by performing rituals, combining it with practice of meditation also. But moksha alone cannot be attained by performing rituals. Why? Karma, we have seen this many times before. Now being students of, being Vedanta for so long, you all know very well why karma cannot remove ignorance. Karma cannot bless us with the jnanam. Karma cannot help attain moksha. Because we understood in all other texts, karma is time-bound in nature. And karma has dependence upon many other. We saw in Mundaka Upanishad previously, karma is dependent on 18 factors. 16 Ritviks and Yajamana and his wife and all of them, 18 factors. Therefore, it is Addudaha. We saw the Addudaha Plavaha. Karma and Karmapalam will be like very fragile floats, fragile rafts. So it is not strong enough to cross the ocean of samsara. To cross the ocean of samsara, we all need a strongest ship, kind of jnanam, not ordinary fragile boats. So karma cannot help. And also, karma is dependent on accessories, karakas. And all those accessories also time-bound in nature. Therefore, karma, which is dependent on accessories, karakas, also is time-bound in nature. Therefore, karma phalam also will be time-bound in nature. Therefore, time-bound karma phalam cannot be a mokshaha. So what we are seeking is moksha, that is not accomplishable as a result of karma. That point we have understood so many times, but still as part of this introduction, I have to tell you that. This all will be seeing in the Sambandha Bhashyam. We are not doing the Bhashyam as such. What are the contents of the Sambandha Bhashyam? I wanted to tell you this. There are six shat karakani, six accessories required for performing karma. Subject of action, object of action, instrument of action, beneficiary of action, purpose of action, then location of action. They are known as shat karakani, six accessories, and all of them are time bound in nature. Therefore, the karma which is dependent on time bound accessories, time bound 18 factors, ritual, cannot be a timeless action. It cannot produce a timeless result also. And we already know karma itself is a product of ignorance. How karma is a product of ignorance? This also old lesson I'm reminding you before entering into the class. Karma is a product of action. It's a product of ignorance. Karma, which is a product of ignorance, is a very ignorance-friendly karma. Why? Because ajnanam, ignorance alone, causes the erroneous self-perception. And erroneous self-perception contributes for the superimposition of limitations of anatma upon the atma. Thereby, everyone entertains a wrong notion. Not even one human being, whoever is born in this world as a human being, there's no mahatma who is a jnani who is born. All of us are naturally have our own wrong notions about the self. The wrong self image is there. And is with wrong notions, having a wrong notion about the self, our conclusions based on our perception of the world also wrong, erroneous definitely. Relatively, they may be right sometimes they're wrong, but most generally, according to Shastam, all our perceptions of the self and the world are definitely wrong. And having self, wrong self image, self notion, wrong notion about the self also, naturally we're all victims of the fundamental human desire that we cannot help if it is impossible for one not to have a desire at all. If you do not have a desire, you're a sick human being. You must have a desire. A healthy human being must have a desire. And that desire, Shastram says, all our desires are different desires. All different desires are originally based on a fundamental desire of wanting to live long happily. And the fundamental desire is caused by these wrong notions and wrong self-image. So this desire alone gives rise to so many types of desires. And all these desires are constantly pressurizing us to do action. So how we are all impelled and compelled, helplessly, we are driven, chased to do karma by our own mental condition, a phenomenon called a desire. It's all very important factors. They may sound very simple. It's a very introduction to Vedanta, but still, even Upanishad class also, we have to see these facts. Why? Because what makes you do karma? Why do you do karma? Any action. Leave alone biological, physical needs. We have to eat, drink, and then go to toilet. That they involve physical activities. Not only that, even any all other action, all other our activities, if you see, definitely they have a reason behind them. So naturally, the very desire itself is a natural phenomenon caused by ignorance. Desire itself is a product of ignorance. Can you believe? It is not wrong to have desires. So desire itself is a product of ignorance. It is the desire is the cause of our activities. Whether whatever karma you do, whether it's a religious activity, secular, sacred, mundane, all forms of activities are caused by ignorance only. And this karma definitely will produce result. There again, we do not have any choice, because the law of karma is such that every karma, any action knowingly, unknowingly done will produce a phalam. And the phalam will be in conformity with your commitment to dharma. It may be right action, can be wrong action. There will be result also. Punyam and papam will be there. And the punya papa definitely will get translated into the experience of pains and pleasures. Okay? And that one has to go through. And this is how, and in order to exhaust the punya papa karma, punya papa karma phalani, results of actions, one has to be born again and again and again and again. See, because having come to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad class, we should not continue without understanding the basic problem of samsara. So we will be continuously born choicelessly. That is why we say bondage. Okay. What causes the birth? Why you are born here? Why were you born? Why am I born? So here, what caused our birth? All our births are caused by our own prarabdha karma palam. Every one of us. There's no shastram can tell you this fact. You are born not just because you are simply born here. You are born because your parabdha karma palam has caused your birth. And you did not have any choice of not being born again. And before being, so after once you are born, death is choiceless. Definitely the death has to happen. Death will happen. I don't want to die. If you decide, you do not have any choice over not dying. You do not have any choice over not being born again. It is an important factor in any introductory Vedanta, any introduction to Vedanta. You must understand what is samsaraha, what is bondage. What is bondage? This choicelessness of not being born again or not dying now is said to be what? This choicelessness alone shows that how we do not have any freedom. You do not have freedom not to be born again. You do not have any freedom not to die now. This is what is said to be bondage. If you decide, okay, if you can, you can decide. All of us will decide for living forever. No. Okay, there is no choice. And Lord Yama will come once the parabdha is over and he will be knocked at the door and take us back. Similarly, once you die also, at last let me finish it now. No. Again, rebirth also is choiceless. You have no choice of not being born again. This choicelessness alone is said to be bondage. And we are all bound by this karma phalam. It's called bondage of karma. It's called samsara. And in this samsara, between birth and death also, there's no way of escaping going to the pairs of opposites. Especially human being has to go through both pains and pleasures. The dvandvas are inevitable. No human life can be a life of only pains or only pleasures. That is how parabdha is there for every one of us. It's a choiceless. This is what is said to be bondage. And for a person to free oneself from this bondage, in order not to be born again, thereby not to die also. Once you're born, death is inevitable. So not to be born again. So not to die also. And not to need not go through these pairs of opposites. Which is, then for that, Shastram says, the human being has the highest purpose in life. The human life itself is a high purposeful life. The greatest purpose is to discover the truth of one's own essential, one's own self, which is otherwise said to be Atma Jnanam, Brahma Jnanam, Paramatma Jnanam. And in discovering this truth, what happens? All this, the whole samsara, caused by wrong perception and wrong notions will resolve for good. That is where freedom is. Therefore, the main aim of the Veda Shastram is to help an individual discover the higher, this truth, not simply making the person perform the ritual, enjoy the benefits. Because performance of karma is good, important. At the same time, without moving on to Jnana Kanda, simply remain in karma kanda whole life, performing ritual and ritual and ritual, accumulating punya papam, not making any effort to find, discover the truth, will retain a person in samsara forever. So Veda's aim is not, main aim is not making a person perform the rituals, even though Veda prescribes rituals. Veda's main aim is not making a person perform the ritual alone. Making the person perform the ritual, make him enjoy the benefits, make him understand the limitations of all benefits of karma, thereby help a person discover vairagyam towards all these ends, thereby help him discover interest, help him discover the interest in the knowledge of the truth, and make him discover the truth also, then help him discover freedom. That is the aim. This is what Shankaracharya says. This is the difference between Purva Mimamsakaha and Shankara Bhagavatpada. Then, so this Purva Mimamsaka has another problem also. Veda Shastram presents many, many statements of subtle facts. Veda Shastram reveals many, many statements of subtle facts. And Purva Mimamsakaha denies, he is very reluctant to accept those subtle statements of subtle facts, to accept that they're all very important. And in his view, all the statements of subtle facts are not important. And the statements of subtle facts are taken to be arthavada vakyani by a Purva Mimamsaka. As all subtle statements of subtle facts revealed by the Shastram, Veda Shastram, are taken to be arthavada vakyani, are taken to be apramanam. For him, they are not important. What is important for him? Any statement which prescribes karma, do this karma for getting this result. He is very happy. Okay, you want children? Parvam putra kameshti yaga. They are all statements. But he, according to him, only statements ordaining rituals, compelling rituals are important for him. Other statements of subtle facts are taken to be arthavada vakyani, unimportant statements for him. Why? Because Purva Mimamsaka's argument itself that a statement revealing the action is known as a vidhivakyam, and a vidhivakyani, so karma prachodaka vakyani, vidhivakyani or karma prachodaka vakyani. They make it clear? Statements ordaining duties, ordaining karmas are known as vidhivakyani, karma prachodaka vakyani. Those sentences alone are important according to him. Therefore, and he states that the entire Veda itself is meant for making people perform rituals and enjoy the benefit of rituals. And other this, apart from the statements, such statements which reveal the, which ordain rituals, prescribe rituals. Apart from those statements which prescribe rituals, other statements should not be taken into account. What he says, Purvimamsakaha, he says, we should take into account only those statements, sentences, which prescribe karma, which ordain karma, known as vidhivakyani, karma prachodaka vakyani. But other statements of subtle facts should not be taken into account, should not be given importance. They should be ignored. That is their argument. Therefore, suppose there are many Mahavakyani are there, like Tattvamasi, Aham Brahma Asmi, you know, I am Atma Brahma. They're all important statements. Why? Important statement means what? A statement revealing the essential oneness of the individual and the total. And only by discovering the fact revealed by the statement, you see how what is absolutely real and what is empirically real. And when you see what is empirically real, what is absolutely real, then you will take absolutely real to be absolutely real. You take the empirically real to be empirically real. So that you will, once you understand the fact, you accept the fact. And acceptance of fact will help you not to be disturbed by what is revealed by the fact also. It will make a person very, very mature. But whereas Purvimimamsakaha will say, all those Mahavakyani also, which reveal the essential oneness, to be unimportant express statements. So according to Purvimimamsakaha, all those Mahavakyani are all unimportant statements. Why? Because there is no karma. In Tattvamasi Mahavakyam or I am Atma Brahma, Aham Brahma Asmi, in those statements, there is no karma. Oh, you do this ritual, you get this benefit. There is no karma revealed there. In Mahavakyam, does Mahavakyam reveal any karma? No karma there. It reveals a fact. It's a simple but still a statement of profound, subtlest fact. According to Karma Kandi, it doesn't convey any meaning for him. There's no ritual. Do this ritual. Do get this benefit. Go to heaven. Therefore, for him, such statements of facts are not at all important for him. Is very unimportant for him. Is another problem. Why? Because for them, once you perform the karma, karma produces the result, and result will bless the person with some pleasure. And the pleasure will remove one's sorrow. That is their understanding. And we did not understand the karma will produce a result, and the result can contribute for the enjoyment of pleasure, and that pleasure is only time bound. And pleasure will be definitely followed by a pain also. No pleasure can be enjoyed. A pain-free, pure, painless pleasure is not there in the world. We have to remember, Vedanta students repeatedly remember this fact. Not only for one person, for the whole world, the fact is, whether we like it or not, pain-free, unmixed with pain, pure pleasure is available in Marks and Spencer shop. We can go and buy. Okay, if that is there, we'll all queue. Now, tomorrow, what? Corona, everybody will go there to buy that. It is not possible. Okay, there's no such a thing available for anybody. This is a fact. But for him, for Purvimimamsaka, for him, enjoyment of pleasure is the end. For which? Because enjoyment of pleasure means there's no pain. For that, you need a karma phalam. For that, you perform karma. That is what is important. If a statement does not ordain any karma, there's no vidhivakyam, then he doesn't give importance for that statement. Therefore, Adi Shankara Bhagavatpada, what does he do? In his commentary upon his introductory commentary upon this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, known as Sambandha Bhashyam, he refutes this view of Purimimamsakaha. Not only he refutes, he also states assertively that Karmakandi cannot say that Veda has only Karya Pradhanyam. Purimimamsakaha should not say that Veda has only Karya Pradhanyam or Karma Pramanyam. He should not say that. That means Veda has only the status. Veda enjoys the status of having, giving importance only for karma. He should not say that. So that Shankaracharya condemns, and he also he refutes his view. And to make him understand, to break their head and to make him see the fact in what he says, he has to present many arguments also. And all Vedic statements of subtle facts are very important. So Shankara Bhagavatpada makes it very clear that. So in Karma Kanda also, there are many statements of facts are there. And those facts revealed by the Karma Kanda, of course, Shankara Bhagavatpada accepts all statements of facts. Not only in the Jnanakanda Sattvams, other facts also. So what are all subtle facts revealed in the Karma Kanda? Apart from Vidhi Vakyani, what are all other subtle facts revealed in the Karma Kanda? Suppose that you are the truth, Tattvamasi, I myself am the absolute reality, Aham Brahmasmi. Those are all subtle facts revealing the essential oneness of the truth. They are discussed in the Veda Antabhaga. But what are subtle facts revealed in the Karma Kanda? If you analyze, Karma Kanda states, suppose the karma definitely produces phalam. They're all facts, but relative reality. They're all within the realm of relative reality. Karma definitely produces phalam. No karma ever goes without producing any result. And the result is ordained by the natural law that is looked upon as Bhagavan. And the result has to be exhausted. Result will be, the punyam or papam will be translated into the experience of pain and pleasure, pairs of opposites. And to exhaust that, one has to be born again. So punarjanma, who will teach you or talk to you about punarjanma? The rebirth is inevitable, unavoidable. There's no way of escaping the rebirth. It's a fact. It's a non-verifiable fact. But still, you are here. That's a proof. Non-verifiable sense, not non-provable fact. You can't prove it, but you are here. But still, it's a fact. This is revealed in the Karma Kanda. The Punarjanma. For whom? Punarjanma means what? Not Atma is not born again. But there is something called rebirth. An individual is born again. One's own to exhaust the punya papams of the past karma. These are all subtle facts revealed in the Karma Kanda of the Veda. And all statements of facts, any statement of fact, there are subtle facts, much subtler facts. All these subtle statements of facts or statement of subtle facts are known as Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani. Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani. Because Siddha means already established fact, non-refutable fact. Suppose somebody comes and tells you water is H2O. It is already established fact, universally accepted, proved fact. It is already Siddha Bodhaka Vakyam. Or Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani means the subtle facts, statements revealing the subtle facts. Punarjanma asti. For everybody, punarjanma asti. That is what Bhagavan Krishna says in the second chapter. Now you can understand, as you study Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, how Bhagavad Gita is so beautifully brings out all the facts of entire Veda. You need not study the whole Veda Shastram to understand. Bhagavad Gita will tell you this fact. Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityuhu dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. Jatasya janma dhruvam. For the one who is born, death is definite. For the one who is dead, birth is definite. Jatasya hi dhruvaha mrityuhu. Death is definite for the one who is born. For the one who died, dead, one who is dead also, rebirth is definite. This is a fact. Which Shastram tells you this fact? In Karma Kanda, this fact is revealed. Therefore, and such statements of subtle facts are known as Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani. And now we have other statements also. Okay, you perform this ritual. Okay, Jyotishtomena Yajeta Surga Kamaha. One statement is there. I am giving the example. May a person perform this Jyotishtoma in order to go to heaven. It's a statement of Vidhi. It's called Vidhi Vakyam. A statement revealing a karma. It's not just, it doesn't say anything more than that. Okay, may one perform this ritual to get this benefit. That's a statement ordaining an action, a ritual, is known as Vidhi Vakyam or Karma Bodhaka Vakyam or Karya Bodhaka Vakyam. So Siddha Bodhaka Vakyam is statement revealing a fact. A statement revealing an ordaining karma is known as Karya Bodhaka Vakyam or Vidhi Vakyam or Karma Bodhaka Vakyam. Therefore, the entire Veda is a Pramanam. But the two different views are there. So Purvamimamsakaha, otherwise known as Karma Kandi, takes the Veda as Pramanam only in terms of the Karya Bodhaka Vakyam or Karma Bodhaka Vakyam. He does not take the Veda as the Pramanam. In the Pramanam as the means of attainment of moksha. He does not take the Veda as a means of attainment of knowledge of subtle facts. He does not see Veda as a textbook consisting of Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani. He only sees Veda as the book consisting of primarily Karya Bodhaka Vakyani. Is it clear what I'm saying? Is it clear or not? Yeah. So according to Purvamimamsakaha, Veda consists primarily of Karya Bodhaka Vakyani. He does not consider the Siddha Bodhaka Vakyani, the statements of facts. Whereas the people who take the entire Veda as a Pramanam, at the same time, who see that the ultimate aim of Veda is to help a human being discover the truth, that is Brahma, and such people for whom the end portion of Veda is the ultimate aim. Vedanta itself means, the Veda Anta means discovering the Atma is Vedanta. And such people for whom discovering the Atma is the ultimate goal, which is revealed in the end portion of the Veda, they are known as Uttara Mimamsakaha. Okay, people who take the ultimate aim of Veda being discovery of the Atma, discovery of the truth, they are known as Uttara Mimamsakaha. Uttara Mimamsakaha respect the whole Veda and they see the purpose also. What is the purpose? Karma Kanda serves a given purpose. Upasana Kanda serves a given purpose. Ultimately, those two Kandas prepare the individual for the Jnana Kanda. And Jnana Kanda alone helps a person discover the truth, which is the culmination of the very study. The purpose of the study of the Veda is. That is what Uttara Mimamsaka says. Uttara Mimamsaka respects every entire Veda. Whereas Purva Mimamsaka respects only karma part. He does not really consider the Jnana Kanda part at all. So, Shankara Bhagavatpada makes it very clear. See, every individual jiva survives death. Because there is no such a thing called total, absolute destruction of anything in the world. What we see as destruction is only a change which is known as relative destruction. If at all there's something called a destruction which happens in the world, that destruction is only a relative destruction, which is actually a change, a huge change. Even the change itself is for us unbearable. The change is not for us unbearable because change brings about pain for us. In fact, the change does not bring about the pain. Our incapacity to accept the fact as a fact, our incapacity to accept the change causes the pain. Can you all hear the big thunder? I hope that maybe we will finish the class before the net connection goes. So here, it is very important to remember all these introductory lessons before entering to the actual Upanishad study. That is the fact. So, what Shankara Bhagavatpada says, that every jivatma survives death. So, not Shankara Bhagavatpada says, every jivatma surviving death is an unchangeable fact and revealed in the Karma Kanda of the Veda. That's why I'm telling you repeatedly, Uttara Mimamsakaha, accept the whole Veda with great reverence, respect. They accept all the facts. So Karma Kanda reveals this fact. Yes, every jiva survives death. It's a fact already sees a Siddha Bodhaka Vakyam. Known from the only Karma Kanda. No other scripture teaches you this. And there again, Karma Kanda prescribes some rituals and also states performance of those specific rituals will produce a result which will enable a person go to heaven after the death. And this is also a fact, but we say it's a non-verifiable matter for belief. Why? A fact can be a fact only if you are able to understand it. This is Shastram says, but it's a non-verifiable matter for belief. But if a person has Shraddha in that Vedic teaching, if he follows that, he can enjoy the benefit of it. So such statements are also there in the Karma Kanda. Okay, if you perform this ritual, you will earn this much punyam and afterwards you'll go to heaven. Shastram does say that. So can we say, no, I don't believe it. We do not believe it. That's a different thing, but that's a matter for belief. You cannot disprove that there is no heaven at all. You cannot disprove one will not go to heaven. So nor can you prove, yes, definitely one will go to heaven. Such statements are actually matter for non, it's a non-verifiable belief. They're also there in the Karma Kanda. But still Shankaracharya says, no, when you have Shraddha in Veda Shastram, because finally what Veda Shastram reveals is a fact which is verifiable. Therefore, you must have Shraddha in it, you must accept it. Because Veda Shastram says, you need not be interested in going to heaven. But it is Veda says it is true. Therefore, when Veda says a person who performs a given specific ritual known as Jyotishtoma and he will earn punyam to go to heaven means, what does Shastram reveal already? Shastram reveals a subtle fact. This person, only physical body alone gets dropped here. This person does not die. He continues to survive. How is it possible for a person to go to heaven if he does not survive? The non-surviving person cannot go to heaven. So that also reveals the fact what? There is a survival of jiva after death. Definitely, every jiva survives death. Death is just physical body alone is dropped. Exactly like changing your clothes. You change your clothes, throw away the old clothes, take the new clothes, and you continue to survive. Every day when you change the clothes, you don't die. Changing your clothes, you do not think that you are dying. Similarly, the physical body is dropped and every jiva assumes a new body in keeping with the Paradha Karma Palam. That is why Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Vasam Sijirnani Yatha Vihaya. So many beautiful facts you can understand, enjoy now. All, how Bhagavad Gita teaches what it is in the Bhagavad Shastra. Jiva survives death means, there's a subtle, every individual jiva definitely survives death, means there's no death for jiva at all. There's no destruction of jiva at all. You will never die. If the eye sense in the body is shifted, you are free. The sense part, the fear of death will go. You will never die. There's no death for jiva. Jiva cannot be killed at all. Only physical body will get dropped. You have to leave this physical body. That is what is not desirable for you. That is what is death. Okay. This fact also is revealed in the Karma Kanda. Okay. I'm telling you what all facts revealed in the Karma Kanda. So Shankaracharya points out these are all facts revealed in the Karma Kanda. And based on that Karma Kanda facts alone, even Vedanta Shastram continues to teach what is absolutely real, what is empirically real, etc. So the very fact that when this person Karma Kandi accepts the fact that Jiva will go to heaven as a result of performing the ritual means this is a fact is accepted that Jiva survives death. Okay, that is another fact which we understand from Karma Kanda of the Veda. And another fact is, even heaven, life in heaven also, just as life in the Bhuloka, life in this world of mortals is not permanent, so also life in heaven also is not permanent. You can go there, be there, exhaust the punyam. Again, once the punyam gets exhausted, that place also, the change is inevitable. Whether it's a human body or without a body in heavenly life, any enjoyment of any pleasure is time-bound in nature. Therefore, heaven etc. are also within the realm of the objective universe, within the realm of the material world only. Heaven also within the realm of the matter only. This is another fact revealed in the Karma Kanda. Therefore, Adi Shankara Bhagavad Pada, therefore death should not be taken as an ultimate end of a human being, ultimate end of a death, physical death. Death is only a change which should not be taken as the end of the individual, which is revealed in the karma kandaha, which means deha vyatiriktaha jivaha asti, deha vyatiriktasya jivasya astitvam, deha vyatiriktaha jivaha asti. What does it mean? There is a jiva which is distinct from the physical body. The jiva definitely is distinct from the physical body, which survives death even after leaving the physical body. That is why we do shraddha, do karma for all our ancestors. Every individual after leaving the physical body survives death. It's called deha vyatirikta jivasya astitvam, also is established in, what does it mean? Deha vyatirikta jivasya astitvam means what? Karma kanda establishes the fact of existence of jiva after the body, survival of jiva after death. Deha vyatiriktasya jivasya astitvam. Karma kanda establishes, karma kanda reveals, not establishes, karma kanda reveals the fact of survival of jiva after death. Now, Shankara Bhagavatpada, taking these facts revealed in the karma kanda of the Veda, and he makes this, he presents his argument. If the fact revealed in the karma kanda is accepted by Purvamimamsakas, then naturally the fact revealed in the jnana kanda of the Veda also should be accepted. That is his argument. So Veda Shastram reveals throughout, from karma kanda to jnana kanda, reveals subtle facts also, apart from, along with prescribing rituals, disciplines, values, karma, karma palams, etc. Veda Shastram also reveals much subtler facts throughout the Shastram. And all the facts must be understood. When you take all the facts also, finally analyze the Purusharthas also, it will become very clear. The purpose of living this human life ultimately is discovering the moksha, and which is nothing but discovery of the essential nature of the reality, obtaining as one's own self. And that is the culmination of the study of the Veda. It is another point. I think I'll stop here now, and we'll see the rest in the next class. If you have any question in what I said today, in next class we will enter into, I have to do it more of this. I couldn't complete this. I have to say something more. These are all important points to understand the Sambandha Bhashya. We'll continue in next class. Before entering into the actual text, we had to do a lot of things. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamodachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 ஹரிஹ ஓம் தத்சத் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ ஹரிஹ ஓம்.